All right, continuing on with the theme of protecting our children and our grandparents and our immunocompromised, my talk today is on residential meth contamination. How many of you have heard of this? Oh, good. That's awesome. All right, so I have no financial relationships to disclose. Start off with this story. This is a woman that I came to get to know who lived in Salt Lake City for a lot of her life. And she had 12 children, and she found out that one of her children who was living in the home with her, and he was the only other one in the home, had been smoking meth. And when she found out, she decided to move out. And this is her home. It was quite a large home, and in fact, she still owns it, but it hasn't been remediated because of the cost. It's quite expensive to remediate. So, a little bit of background on methamphetamine. Meth is a powerful and addictive drug. So, it's estimated that about 5.3% of the United States has tried meth. There's about 300,000 new users every year. And in Utah, only alcohol tops the list of reasons for admission to substance abuse programs. And so it's estimated that about 1.1 to 3% of houses may be contaminated with meth. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that. Utah has been, historically, has had a lot of meth labs. And it's been praised recently for getting rid of a lot of labs. But even with the problem of contamination of homes by meth labs, there's also a problem if you only smoke meth once in a home. So John Martini of National Jewish Health in Denver did some research to find out that just smoking one meth one time in a home could raise the levels hundreds of times above the legal limit. And so Utah has been proactive in this regard and maybe one of the most proactive of states. In 2004, they adopted a pretty stringent detection limit or a remediation standard. And then in 2009, they made it a requirement for landowners to disclose if they did have knowledge of that a property was contaminated. In 2010, they tried to pass another bill to require landowners to disclose if they suspected it, but that didn't pass. So despite efforts to protect the public, it's not clear. It is not clear how many people know what residential meth contamination is or what to do if you have it. That is the reason we did this research, and Steve here is my mentor in this. We worked together on this project. So the aim of this study was to collect survey data to find out how many people knew about meth contamination, what they would do, and whether or not they thought it was dangerous. And also to find out where they go for information if they do go anywhere for information when they buy a home or move. So meth use is highest among these demographics, and so we tested the hypothesis that they would know more about meth. And then also the purpose was to inform an educational campaign in Utah. So this is all Utah data. The way we did it was we did a telephone survey, cross-sectional telephone survey of Utah residents. We randomly generated phone numbers with Excel, and so we dialed a whole lot of numbers that didn't go anywhere. And we did regression models in SAS to identify which demographic variables are associated with low knowledge and also with low working knowledge, meaning they didn't know what to do if they were put in the situation of a contaminated home. So the results, we dialed 17,584 phone numbers, and 6.5 of those were actual people, and 44% of the people we talked to responded to the survey, which I thought was a really great response rate. A few from this slide, I'm just going to highlight that the underrepresented group was the linguistically isolated. We didn't translate it into Spanish, and 4% of Utah's population is Latino and linguistically isolated. So, and then there were some overrepresented groups, mostly the older, the homebound probably. So just to flip through some of these demographics to show you how statistically similar our sample was to Utah. And aside from the ones that I mentioned, they're very similar. So this was an artificially created similarity. We chose to call that many 435 area code numbers and 801. This was not. So we ended up right on with how many people rented or owned. So now to the results. 99% had heard of methamphetamine, which is good, but 68% had heard of residential meth contamination. Not having heard was associated with being younger and or of a lower income. So although they may be using meth more, they may not know that it can be contaminating a home. And only 20% could recognize signs of a previous meth lab. Here's a little graphic showing who has heard of residential meth contamination. And then realtors were by far the most consulted source of information on residential meth contamination. Of those who did, only 7.3% did. But realtors will be an important avenue for education in the future. So some of the questions we asked were, how confident are you that you could recognize signs of a previous meth lab? 74% were somewhat or very unconfident. So there's a good population to educate. And low confidence in this was associated with having lived in a primary residence for a long time. So people who move less often are apparently less concerned. And only a little more than 20% could recognize a previous meth lab. And here's another interesting graphic. People who had less education were more able to recognize meth labs. For perceived risk, we asked, how dangerous is meth contamination? Only 80% said it was very or extremely dangerous. So that's another indication that there's a gap in knowledge or a gap in perceived risk. And higher perceived risk is associated with a 435 area code, which is more rural in Utah, generally, and also plans to change your primary residence sooner. So plans to be moving, they were more concerned. And now this question gets at the heart of what we are trying to identify, whether or not people would respond in the correct way. Given a hypothetical situation that their home was contaminated, we asked them what they would do. Would they move out temporarily or permanently? This statistic includes both, temporarily or permanently, if they had discovered meth had been smoked or cooked in their home. And only 42% said they would move out for sure. So that's the most telling statistic probably. And the demographics this was associated with was owning one's primary residence for longer, being male, white, and higher income. So these people perceived themselves at lower risk. And they also, which probably influenced them to not want to move, given that hypothetical situation. And then the majority of Utah residents said that it was very important that Utah set legal limits. And they did not want, they wanted it to be more strict. The limits to stay more strict. Here's a graphic of what they preferred. This is the current standard. Is it 1.5? I think it's 1.5. And that's the standard that the California EPA came up with. It's a health-based standard. Now, conclusions. Who has the best working knowledge of meth contamination? So these are the most important demographics. The 435 area code, renters who are planning to move, and people who have more children at home. They have the best working knowledge. So the others are the ones we need to target. Many are cautious, but only a small percentage of Utahns have a working knowledge. And just a sample of some of those statistics that we just talked about. Only 1 in 5 felt confident to recognize the signs of meth contamination. And only 1 in 13 reported consulting any information prior to moving in. 1 in 16 Utahns are not sure their home is meth-free. So apparently some are sure. We did not ask why. In conclusion, over half of Utahns would respond incorrectly if faced with an immediate decision regarding residential meth contamination. Like I said, 54% would not move out if they found out their home had been smoked in, which can be dangerous. And 30% would not move out if they had a lab in their home previously. So, again, you can see the gaps that there are. There is a need for increased awareness. The limitations for this study, as I said before, the linguistically isolated were underrepresented. Those without phones, obviously. And we did not ask questions about religion. As you know, Utah is a very homogeneous group, and it would have been nice to differentiate between the LDS and the non-LDS or other religions and some other limitations here. Move on. So for recommendations, some of the recommendations we came up with were we could determine the actual prevalence of residential meth contamination. Although 45% of people wouldn't move out if they found out meth had been smoked in their home, very few would probably be found in that situation. So determining the actual prevalence of residential meth contamination may help us protect people in the future better. Also, spreading the word and targeting most effectively would be targeting the realtors and those at high risk, which are the low income, the rural areas, and those who move often. And also those with low perceived risk, which are the white, the male, the educated, the wealthy, and who have more kids. These educational campaigns should be teaching the warning signs of meth contamination, the proper response, so do you move or do you clean up? Also encouraging people to get a history on their home before they buy it or before they rent. And then also the final recommendation would be to pass legislation to protect residents, and that would be the health-based standard. And most states have a standard, but most states do not have the health-based standard, which would be 1.5, and some are more stringent, some are less stringent than that. And based on the research that John Martini has done, that should include homes where meth has been smoked. So, and just for your information, if there's meth smoked in a home, the levels can be 1 to 50 micrograms per 100 square centimeters. 1 through 50. And if there's a meth lab, the contamination levels can be in the thousands, even to 16,000. And 1.5 is what we should aim for remediation standard. So, and then hopefully we can protect the elderly, the immunocompromised, and the children who are crawling on the carpets. And a thank you to Steve. And Christina McNaughton of the Utah Department of Health, Josh West, and Gene Cole, who are also faculty at BYU in the public health program. So, any questions?
I've lost track of the movement to get ephedrine behind the counter, so that our state passed it quite a while back. And mm-hmm. Are other states doing that now?
Oh, yes.
Or is it a national?
If it's not national, I would be surprised if there were a state that hadn't passed that kind
of. Everybody's doing that. Mm-hmm. So where do they get out? That supposedly made it much harder to set up.
Yes, yes. So meth labs have been radically, well, at least in Utah, there are a lot fewer meth labs being busted each year. I know it still happens. There are other methods now. There's the shake and bake method. There are others and that I don't know much about, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Could you explain what that standard represents, 1.5? It's per square centimeter?
It's micrograms.
Is that the surface wipe, or what is it?
Yes, yes. When they go into a home to test, they mark off 100 square centimeters on a wall or a ceiling or a floor, and they take samples, and then they average it.
Have you ever thought of maybe, is that a group to perhaps target? I'm not sure you know whether realtors will they be so receptive if you aren't paying into your profit, as a threat to your profit. Mm-hmm. But these seminars, that might be a soft target, a low-hanging fruit for.
Yes, yes, definitely. And those are the people most at risk, as we know, the people who are in low-income housing. So definitely a good place to target. But also, for in answer to your other concern, the realtors probably would have an incentive to give this information out because they don't want to be stuck with that, having sold a property like that.
So if, usually if, like if you're going to sell a house or something, like paint or, would that kind of rectify the problem? And does it just air out?
It does decompose over time. You can paint over it. There are no laws against that, but it's underneath the paint. So, there's a problem there. Remediation standards, if you go through the Department of Health in Utah, will typically require decontaminating prior to repainting. So.
What's the main route of exposure that we're concerned of? Like, is it inhalation of dust? Or
yes.
Is it
It's respiratory, hand to mouth, and mostly for children on the floors will be the most affected.
But for adults, it's inhalation.
Yeah.
So if you're renting an apartment, for example, that has been allowed in the past, but the policy of the apartment complex is to automatically repaint as soon as one person leaves, how do you test that if they've already repainted?
Some of it will show through the paint, but the levels will be diminished. And so, it's hard to test if you have painted, for sure.
So is it under the same form that it will cause, is it the meth, is it the actual drug, or is it, like if you smoked it, it's some kind of byproduct, so you wouldn't be...
It's methamphetamine. Because when it's smoked, it's vaporized. So it's in the air, and it sticks to the walls. So, and when you actually do smoke, not all of it goes into your body. So the vast majority of it actually goes into the air. So, and I can answer more questions at the end if anybody else has. If you have questions on how to recognize meth labs or meth exposure issues, then you can ask that too.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Great.